it was kind of an even playing field for all of us underdogs or newbies to the elite field. We were all just fired up on it. And oh, sorry, my dog's barking.
That's okay. Who's that?
That's my dog, Chili. I'm not sure why he came down here to bark at me.
It's okay. This podcast has been interrupted by dogs before.
All right. I'm just going to let him out.
Yeah, sure.
Oh my gosh, my dog's back. I even closed the door.
Welcome to the Canadian Cycling Magazine podcast. I'm Matthew Piaro. You just heard from Lucas Cruz. He was talking about being an underdog at last year's Downhill World Championships. And, as if on cue, his dog Chili chimed in. If you are keeping score, that is the second dog that has bark-bombed an episode of the Canadian Cycling Magazine podcast. It seems I reward such behavior by letting the pooch open the show. Lucas Cruz races for the Norco Factory Downhill Team. As a junior, he was national champion in 2018. In 2019, he was third overall in the Junior World Cup Series. He just joined the elite downhill ranks in 2020. He won the Kicking Horse Dual Slalom at last year's Crankworx Summer Series. Cruz seems like someone who's always on the go. He not only races DH, but he skis, snowmobiles, hunts, and rides dirt bikes. I think that list only scratches the surface of his pursuits. I spoke with Cruz about many of these activities. We also discussed his days racing BMX, a highly influential kids program run out of Whistler, and the legacy of Steve Smith. Oh, and also we talked about the importance of having fun, which Cruz really seems to have figured out. Before we hear from Lucas Cruz, I'd like to present episode sponsor MS Bike. MS Bike is a ride that helps support the more than 90,000 Canadians living with multiple sclerosis. Start training for the event. Soon, the outdoor training series will start via Ride with GPS and Strava. The big goal is a ride on Saturday, September 18th, which will bring the whole community together. You can choose a planned route or set your own course and time goals. Your fitness level does not matter. This event is fantastic for new cyclists and experienced riders. Canada has one of the highest rates of MS in the world. On average, 12 Canadians are diagnosed with MS each day. So, register and start fundraising now at msbike.ca. Lucas Cruz, we're speaking in late April after the Maribor World Cup was supposed to take place. It was rescheduled to August. That announcement came in mid-March. How did that change affect you?
Yeah, back in March, when we were supposed to be heading out to Maribor, we were all packed up. All my bags were packed. Bikes were ready to go. And then the morning before, we got a phone call saying that we weren't heading out. So it was just a bit shocking at that time. And we'd prepared so much all winter and everything. And I was really excited to be heading into it. But do what we can and stay hungry for sure.
I'm guessing you're facing a lot of pivots like for the past year. But before we get into those, you were fourth at Maribor at the World Cup in 2019 when you were a junior. What do you think of that venue?
Yeah, I loved Maribor. It was it's a great place with actually similar weather to here. So we really liked that. We as in us Canadians, and there was lots of roots there and a big rock garden. So I think all of us Canadians did pretty well there. And yeah, it was a great way to start off that 2019 season where I was just trying to solidify my place as one of the top riders in junior. That was actually my first race with the SRAM TLD racing team. So yeah, got all the cobwebs out and had an amazing season after that.
Now, when you say it reminds you of the riding or the weather here, do you mean specifically your hometown, Pemberton, BC?
Well, I guess, yeah. Pemberton's pretty dry most of the year round, except for when there's 3 feet of snow on the ground. But yeah, just kind of the BC coast in general, where I spend most of my time riding.
So then, over the past weekend, instead of racing Maribor, what did you do instead?
Well, it was my youngest brother Levi's birthday, so we had a very small group of our close family who was inside our bubble. We just celebrated his double digits. He turned 10. So we played some badminton, a little different than what I was expecting, but loved all of it.
Nice. And you did get some riding in, though, I understand.
We did. My other brother, my middle brother, Tegan, and I, we headed down to Cyprus in North Vancouver and did a whole bunch of shuttles with my teammate, Henry Fitzgerald, who lives just down the hill.
So there's badminton and mountain biking. To me, that almost sounds like a tame weekend for you. Now, I'm just saying that. I'm basing this off of what I see you're up to on social media, which seems like a healthy amount of pursuits, let's say. I've seen sledding or snowmobiling in the winter. You tinker with your pickup. It's got, like, I think you said earlier before the interview, it's pretty tall. It's got a few extra leaf springs in it. You ride dirt bikes, although you're in between dirt bikes right now. So you do so much. How do you even pick an activity at the start of a day?
I've always kind of done that. I'm very grateful to live where I do because, you know, we have so much to choose from. And my parents have never really pushed me to do any one thing. You know, they haven't really been like the stereotypical hockey parents. But yeah, we've just done what we're passionate about. And I love mixing it up between all kinds of things. And it's just exciting to do different stuff every day.
So it's spring now, but I still want to touch on some of your winter activities. How do they, or do they, set you up for your DH season?
Usually in the winter, I would be going down to California to go ride and pretty much anywhere to get out of the snow where I live. So this year, since the travel restrictions were in place, I just really wanted to embrace the winter, and I've always loved the winter. So I bought my dad's sled or snowmobile and really fell in love with that. In some ways, it is good cross training, but that's not the reason I do it. You know, it's a really good way to see how small we are in the world, and we can go up on these massive glaciers and go across them at like 120k an hour for like hours if you wanted to, you know. So we live in a pretty amazing place, and I really wanted to take advantage of that while I was home.
To me, it looks like sledding can be like a lot of work as you're fighting through the powder on a descent. Is that true?
Oh yeah, totally. I have never done such a hard sport before, you know, and like the learning curve of it is just massive. So we did figure it out by the end of the year, and I think lots of the skills from mountain biking or BMX and anything with handlebars kind of crossed over. But yeah, it is such a workout, and it is the complete opposite body movements of mountain biking. So yeah, it was very, very challenging for me, but I loved it. Yeah, I loved the challenge.
The opposite body movements of mountain biking, is that going to mess you up later?
I think there's quite a bit of separation from it. I tried to take the aggression and like confidence you need to turn one of those like machines that are over 500 pounds. I tried to take that part of it and transfer that into my riding. For sure, like the body position's different, but I think just the balancing act of it, you know, like mountain biking is all about your weight shift from side to side, and that's amplified in snowmobiling just because it's so much heavier. So like maybe the way that people cross train on motocross bikes, because they're so much heavier and then they can really throw around their mountain bike, is the same way that I try and take my sledding into my mountain biking.
I find that so interesting. It's like, if you'll forgive this, it's as if going full sled will help you go full send.
Yeah, fair enough. It's definitely no hesitation out there. And it's also, the other aspect of it is really being aware of your surroundings, because people die out there. My parents have lost so many close friends that I know too. So yeah, just being aware and respecting where you are in the mountains.
Right. You've got to balance out that fun with like the seriousness of, well, there could be serious consequences, as you've mentioned.
Definitely, yeah. But then on the other side of those consequences is like the purest form of freedom, I feel like. You know, there's zero boundaries, and yeah, it's just a great time.
About a year ago, in an interview, you said that you were going to start road riding. Have you?
I have, yeah. I got a road bike, thankfully, through Norco. And I've been using it quite a lot here, doing my intervals on it, or just like recovery rides. I never thought I would be a road biker, but it's an amazing tool. And yeah, it's awesome.
Nice. Another thing with handlebars that you can dig.
Yeah, there we go. Yeah.
Okay, I want to get into some other pursuits of yours that don't involve handlebars. I heard you sew. Is that true?
Oh, that's funny. Where's this coming from?
It's an interview that's on another cycling publication.
Okay. I just don't like to throw stuff away, I guess. I like to fix my own stuff or patches or do a little bit of design stuff, I guess, like adding certain patches or logos to things that I find cool.
But you haven't made a shirt yet or anything like that?
No. No, haven't done that. Just more repair work.
Nice. And hunting. How long have you hunted for?
I guess I did my hunting course when I was like 11, maybe. And then shot my first deer when I was 12. And then been doing it ever since then.
Every hunting season? Every fall?
Yeah, every fall I try and get out at least for a week. We drive a little ways into the interior for it, just because it's better terrain. But yeah. For sure, every year.
And what do you like about that?
That's another one of my favorite things that doesn't involve handlebars. It's just an amazing way to like free yourself and really be primitive, like really go down to your roots and find out who you are, I guess. Just out there, your senses are going crazy and you hear every little stick move or branch or anything like that. And it's also just a great way to get healthy food for my family. And we try and do that as well with our massive gardens here at the farm. We like to harvest our own food.
I want to talk more about your family. As we sort of mentioned, your brothers are pretty active and your parents are as well. Can you tell me your parents' history with bikes?
They are both from Prince George. So Northern BC, my dad and mom were very big into skiing. My mom was a ski racer. Her family grew up racing, and my grandpa was the national team coach for a long time. They've always been big into skiing, and I guess my dad used to chase my mom around on the Purden ski hill. As far as mountain bikes, my dad just fell in love with it when they first came out, and he always tells us about how he used to ride down the big sandblasts in Prince George, like you see those big chutes being ridden in like Williams Lake area, that sort of stuff. So he likes to brag about how he was kind of the pioneer of that.
And then how did they encourage you to ride bikes, or did it just sort of come organically, naturally?
Yeah, I think it was definitely a natural thing for us living in Pemberton our whole lives. Of course, my parents were actively riding here, and yeah, I just fell in love with it and always rode my BMX. And then naturally it was just a progression to go into the Whistler Bike Park, and it just kind of took off from there.
I want to talk more about BMX and Whistler Bike Park in a minute, but you mentioned your parents, you used the phrase like hockey parents or something, that they didn't pressure you in that way. But how did they direct you as DH became more serious for you, more of a job?
Yeah, I guess that's a great word for it, directing. As I said, they never pushed us to one sport, or there was never pressure on us to be professional athletes. But as soon as they knew that I had a passion for it, it was just more the encouragement and full-on support from them and the rest of my family.
I want to talk about the role of DFX Kids, the programs from Whistler Bike Park, and how they help your skills. When did you start attending that summer program?
DFX, I probably started when I was 6 years old or seven. Yeah, same thing with pretty much all the other kids around here. It was like cheaper than daycare to send us to ski school or to bike camp. Yeah, that, I think that's pretty special for where we live. Yeah, it's just a great way to progress and have a lot of fun while you do it.
Did your brothers also attend that program?
Yeah, Tegan and Levi were both in DFX since about the same age, around six.
And remind listeners about some of the other pro downhillers who have come up through that program.
I have been in DFX with names like Ben Wallace, Ethan Chandro, Seth Sherlock. These guys are all racing World Cups, and we all grew up together. There's many more. Yeah, we all grew up together riding, and some of us decided to fully pursue it. Well, actually, quite a lot of us decided to do that. And it's really cool to be still racing and riding with my friends that I grew up with.
So what is it about the program that has made it so successful in that respect, launching so many riders to the higher ranks?
I think as we progressed through the regular bike camp stuff, they started to develop more of a racer-oriented side. It was never like too serious or anything like that. It was just to try and get us to be developing as riders. And yeah, I guess that's what they called it, the Whistler Development Team. Yeah, it was an amazing tool for all of us and set us off on our World Cup journeys for sure.
How has your connection with former DFX Kids evolved as you've all grown and gone on to different teams?
I think we've become so much closer. You know, we're still amazing friends, and everyone is going through similar experiences. So we have a lot in common, and something that we can share and that we've experienced together. The BC downhill racing scene is very close, and you see that every day when you see us shuttling or training together or whatever. It's a similar feeling to when we were 10 and 12, just riding the bike park.
Before downhill became your focus, you raced BMX. Give us a picture of your BMX racing days.
I started racing BMX when I was 9, and Tegan started at that same time, so he was 5 years old. That's a very intense scene for sure. It's loud in there, and it's just a lot of kids all racing head to head. So we definitely got a lot of our confidence on our bikes from that sort of racing, as well as a lot of our on-bike skills. If you talk to lots of the top guys, they seem to have some sort of BMX background. And I'm very thankful to have BMX racing in my background because it helps me a lot in my downhill racing.
Is there a specific example that you can think of where BMX helped you in maybe some of your more recent races?
Yeah, for sure. I think it helps me at every race, you know, and just finding speed maybe where other people struggle to, or just where it doesn't seem evident, because that's what BMX racing's all about, is finding speed on every feature and carrying it through the entire track. Yeah, any sort of like doubles or rollers or anything like that, I just try and squeeze as much speed as I can out of it, the same way that I would do it on a BMX racetrack.
Why did you decide to switch your focus to downhill?
We were racing BMX for many years and traveling around doing all the nationals, and it was a lot for sure. It was a lot for our whole family to be going to all of these races every weekend. And we would race like four nights a week after school, driving up the Sea to Sky corridor to whatever track there was. The change, though, actually wasn't transitioning really from BMX racing to downhill racing. It was actually changing from freestyle slopestyle skiing to downhill racing.
Oh, so the main competitive thing was the skiing, and then that went over to downhill mountain biking.
Yeah, so I always raced BMX in the summers and the fall, and we loved that part of it. But I was mostly getting into freestyle skiing and really trying to pursue that. And my goal was to get to the Olympics with slopestyle. And then that changed slowly, but over the course of a couple summers where I would usually be up on the glacier training for skiing, I just kept getting injured and missing out on my summers. I didn't really feel like I was progressing that much anymore in my skiing. So I think it was just a natural thing for me to pick up on my other passion, which was mountain biking, and pursue that.
I find it interesting that you mentioned you had Olympic ambitions because, well, for example, BMX is an Olympic sport, but downhill mountain biking is not. So in this Olympic year, do you ever, I don't know, think back fondly to BMX and the opportunity it might have offered you in that respect?
Yeah, definitely. I always thought of it like that, you know, like the Olympics is the pinnacle of any sport, BMX included. So that was always in my mind, but I just really had a passion for downhill racing, and the pinnacle of the sport is still there. It's just not considered the Olympics. It's world championships and the World Cups, which I'm very grateful to be attending.
Should downhill be an Olympic sport?
That's a tough one. Honestly, I don't know, because it's just so different and hard to find a venue, I would think. And the Olympics has very strict rules for how they make their courses and everything, from what I know. Downhill courses are completely different from each venue you go to, like the feature size, the gap size in some of the jumps, or the conditions and the width and length of the track can go from, like, Croatia was 2.5 minutes to Andorra and Fort William, which are over 4. So I think it would be tough to put it in the Olympics, but we'll see.
We're going to continue with my conversation with Lucas Cruz in a moment, but first, I want to tell you about this episode's second sponsor, Etnies. The shoe company got its start in skateboarding 35 years ago. About 3 years ago, it started working with freestyle phenomenon Brandon Semenuk. The rider has put a lot of thought into Etnies mountain bike shoes, including the Semenuk Pro shoe. Starting at the bottom, the shoe has the Formula G sole. It's a compound that's 2 times grippier than standard rubber. Its GeoHex tread pattern works in conjunction with the pins on your pedal, giving you lots of options when you're finding the best foot placement. There's an ankle shield for extra protection from your bike frame and gears. These Etnies shoes might not have you flying down trails exactly like Semenuk does, but they will help you ride at your best. Now back to Lucas Cruz. You moved up to the elite ranks in 2020. You also joined the Norco Factory downhill team that year. Then the pandemic hit. Races were canceled all over the place. In most disciplines, racing only really returned later in 2020 for elite riders. Could you say you got into the elite field at the right time?
Maybe not an opportune time for that, but we made the most of it. And we also had the Crankworx Summer Series to really showcase all of our BC riders. And that was an amazing event for me and Norco, just because it was our first year together and there was so much media going around those couple weeks. So yeah, it was a great season and I don't wish any different of it.
I'm wondering if you could contrast, say, that season with your younger brother Tegan's. This year he's on RockShox Trek race team, but as a younger rider, does he have fewer opportunities than you do to race, I mean?
Yeah, definitely. Like last year was a big one for him, but he got in a total of 0 races. So it's hard to show yourself off, I guess, as a rider. And it's definitely hard for him to be noticed by different teams because there's no races for him to be at. So he pretty much became like a social media guy, you know? It's definitely tough for him. I'm sure he's very grateful for his opportunity with RockShox Trek. And I think, my relationship with those guys did help a little bit, but he's also trying to carve his own path.
How have things been for you with Norco Factory? What opportunities has the team given you?
Yeah, Norco is amazing because they really value our input in things and they value us as riders and as our own brands. So they like to showcase our personalities and everything. And they also get us to do a lot of the R&D and a lot of the media for them. So Norco's athletes really are the brand. And I love that about them.
Do you ride or interact much with the other riders?
For sure, yeah. Henry is just a couple hours away from me and Elliot's living on the island right now, but we're pretty tight and we got a lot closer during that Crankwork summer series. So they're amazing teammates to have and very similar in a lot of ways to me. Yeah, so grateful to have those guys as teammates. We definitely see a lot of each other. Henry and I train a couple days a week in Squamish usually, or we'll end up riding on the weekends. I recently spent a couple weeks over on the island living with Elliot, and we did a lot of filming and just riding and training together as well. So we're a pretty close-knit team.
Do you ever see any of the cross-country folks?
Yeah, I do, and they're also really cool people. We're really hoping to get closer to those guys this season with a team camp in Andorra at the end of May. So our whole cross-country team and the whole downhill team will be spending a few weeks in Andorra and living together. So that will be a great time for sure.
Is there one person who has had the most influence on your DH career?
Yeah, I thought about this question a lot, actually. And I couldn't really nail it down to a who. It was more of a what question, if that's okay.
Yeah.
I really feel like it's the entirety of the downhill scene across the world, but really I want to focus on BC and just the whole community of downhill racing and everyone that makes it up. Yeah, it's definitely been the biggest influence on my choices and my racing and that entire, you know, that Stevie's legacy that is he has left behind is just a great way for us all to be competing on the world stage and for us to strive to be under that Canadian downhill wing. For me as an individual, the coaches that I've had all throughout my life have really influenced me and how mentally I think about racing and everything. Like I've been competing for as long as I can remember in basketball or karate, skiing, and a lot of biking. So all those different figures in my life, I think, have really shaped who I am and the experiences that I've had.
I guess that speaks to the health of the downhill community in BC, that you can't name just one person. There's just so many influences. How did it become such a healthy system, community, ecosystem, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, I think it's just the collection of everyone's passion for it, you know? And I do believe that Stevie has had a really big influence on it.
You're talking about Steve Smith, who died a few years ago. How is his influence continuing today?
I think he just inspired a lot of people to go for it, you know, and have a lot of fun while doing it. So he inspired a lot of racers, but also just people who wanted to see that become a healthy scene. So like the people that are involved with the BC Cups or the Dunbar Summer Series or the Canada Cups, all of the BC or Canadian downhill scene has really been inspired by him, I think. And there's that drive there to continue his legacy and to make Canada proud and have a great time while doing it.
In 2020, what was the most significant racing event for you and why?
I didn't do a ton of racing, I guess, but numbers-wise, I did a lot because of that Crankwork Summer Series. To nail it down to one event, I guess it would be the Kicking Horse Dual Slalom, just because it was my first year in Elite and there was a lot of stuff up in the air. And to win that event was just kind of reassuring or a confidence boost to know that I'm solidifying my place as a elite rider, you know?
You raced at the World Championships in Leogang in Austria. Before that, you'd been in Leogang in 2018 and 2019, and you finished in the top 10 both times. But how was the World Championships for you in 2020?
Yeah, it was a whirlwind for sure. It started pouring rain and snowing quite a bit every day. And we just didn't really know what to expect, you know. But us underdogs were definitely fired up about it because it was more of an even playing field. And an even playing field in a way that it was just so variable. You know, you can crash 4 or 5 times in a run and still make it down with an all right time. So it was crazy. And we had to change our tactics a lot because usually in a race, you're just trying to go as fast as you can. But this was more like about average speed or just really staying on your bike. So yeah, it was super fun because it was so different. And I had a lot of crashes in my race run, so it didn't go very well. But it was a great experience for sure.
What's one thing you learned last year that you hope to apply to your racing this year?
Last year, I really learned that to be an elite racer, you have to analyze every single detail and to really consider every line or every food choice or every recovery option you have. Anything really just to make you perform at your best. You almost have to be selfish in a way. You know, I think every athlete, every professional athlete feels that. You just really have to consider everything and do everything that is best for you at that time. And I did really find that hard to just cater towards myself and not really think about what's best for my teammates or about hurting someone's feelings or anything like that. Just small things like eating properly or having enough food and water around and that sort of thing. It all adds up. And that's what's going to make a difference on your race day, is feeling confident in yourself and covering all the bases.
At this moment, what does your race calendar look like for 2021?
2021 has jumped around a little bit. Maribor got postponed. Fort William, which we were really hopeful for, got canceled completely. So we are going for the Leogang World Cup at the beginning of June. And we're pretty confident with that one because we know they can run a race during the pandemic, like we were just talking about with Worlds. That all went really smoothly and the organizers there did a great job. So that's what my sights are set on as far as races. And then we've got a team camp just before that to get all ready and testing done and everything. And then after that should be the normal World Cup schedule, I guess, except for the postponed race from Maribor, which will be at the beginning of August.
You've talked a lot about the importance of having fun with respect to racing. I feel like it's infiltrated all sorts of corners of this conversation. And I get how fun can keep you motivated. But in contrast to that, what do you see as the role of, say, discipline and focus? And like, do those ideas sit in opposition to fun? Yeah, how do all those things interact? And because you were actually talking about sort of the, you didn't use the word discipline, but just that focusing on the little things. Yeah, is there any conflict between fun and discipline, focus?
Maybe sometimes, different aspects of it. I think they usually go hand in hand as far as the racing side. Like, if you're focused and you're disciplined in your training and doing what's best for you, then you're going to have fun at the end of the day, and you're also going to have a lot of fun at the races. I think the off season is when you're most focused, or is when I'm most focused and disciplined, or that's when it's most key, just to stay on top of your training and keep that drive, keep that fire going, you know? And then the reward from that, where I feel like the fun comes from, is on those race days when you've done all the work, you've prepared for this, and it's time to just really have fun and enjoy what you're doing and what you've worked so hard for.
After this interview, whether it's today or tomorrow or later in the week, what's the next fun thing you're going to do?
I'm going to go ride my bike, because that's what I love doing, and enjoy myself out there.
Well, I think it's inspiring, the level of joy you get from all these activities, and good luck. I hope this race calendar holds together for you, and that you're able to have a good season this year.
All right. Thank you so much.
And that's the episode. It's written and edited by me, Matthew Piorro. I had a lot of help from web editor Terry McCall. He runs your favorite mountain bike website, Canadian MTB. I also had help from web editor Lily Hansen-Gillis. The Canadian Cycling Magazine podcast is produced by Adam Killick. He composed the music too. Thanks to Ontario Creates for its support. And thank you for listening. Please rate and review the show. Ride safely, and I'll talk to you later.